Cavalcade of Kings. Henry VIII, Part 2. Henry divorced Catherine of Aragon and married Anne Boleyn. Wolsey, who had opposed the king's second marriage, fell into disfavor, and between the hatred of Queen Catherine's party and the hatred of those who supported Anne Boleyn, he fell suddenly and heavily. Going down one day to the court of Chancery, where he now presided, he was waited upon by the Dukes of Norfolk and Suffolk.
Hear ye the king's pleasure, Cardinal. His Majesty commands ye to render up the great seal into our hands, and to confine myself quietly to thy house at Esher in Surrey.
Where is your written authority, my lord? Words are meaningless.
Have a care, priest. The words ye slight were uttered by the king's lips.
Thou'rt very officious, Suffolk. And malice and envy have brought forth the coarse metal of which ye are made. How eagerly ye follow my disgrace, even as a vulture follows a dying beast of the field.
The great seal, priest. We demand that it be handed over to us without further argument.
Not so fast, my lord of Norfolk. That seal ye demand was given unto me by the king with his own hands, and he bade me enjoy it and its honors whilst I live, and to confirm his goodness he tied it by letters patent. Now who'll take it from me?
The king who gave it.
It must be himself, then.
The king further demands that you forfeit all thy goods, chattels, and possessions unto his majesty.
How like ye are thy changes of fortune, fat priest.
How deeply I could despise thee, but that my cloth forbids it.
Thy pride and arrogance shall avail thee not when the king learns of thy stubborn refusal to hand over the great seal. Come, my lord Norfolk. We will return to his majesty and leave the holy cardinal to his meditations on how to live a better life.
Farewell, a long farewell to all my greatness. Once I rode in a royal barge upon the fair bosom of the river. Now I wallow in the mud which lies beneath the waters. Never, never to hope again.
The once proud cardinal was further disgraced and later arrested for treason, and coming slowly from York to London, arrived at Leicester, where he was stricken by a fatal illness. It was night when he arrived at Leicester Abbey, and the monks came out of the gate with lighted torches to receive him.
Good father, I am a poor, old, fallen man, come to lay my bones amongst thee. No sun shall ever shine upon mine honors again.
Good father, we bid thee welcome to our poor abode. Pray enter, for the night grows dark and chill with a cruel wind that blows from the north. Come.
I thank thee, my son. Bear with me, I pray thee, for my step is slow. Ah, my son, had I but served my God as diligently as I served my king, he would not have deserted me in mine old age.
Twelve months after Henry's marriage with Anne Boleyn, Cranmer, the new Archbishop of Canterbury, declared his marriage with Queen Catherine void and crowned Anne Boleyn queen. She might have known that no good could ever come from a marriage founded upon such a dastardly wrong as Henry had done to Catherine, and that he who had been so faithless and cruel to his first wife could be even more faithless and cruel to his second. The unfortunate Queen Catherine soon died, and the king became as tired of the second queen as he had been of the first. Henry's affections had now fallen upon Lady Jane Seymour, and he resolved to rid himself of Anne Boleyn by the headsman's axe. The day after Anne's execution, Henry married Jane Seymour, who lived long enough to give birth to a son. Henry then cast his eyes about for another wife, and Cromwell arranged a marriage with Anne of Cleves, a Protestant princess from Germany. Shortly after this lady's arrival in England, Henry sent for the dutiful Cromwell.
Cromwell, you dog! How did you come to pick such a woman to be my wife, eh? How dare you bring this Flanders mare to England?
But, Your Majesty, sir, you demanded a fat wife.
And cannot I have a fat wife and a beautiful one? One at least my gaze can rest on without disgust. You dog, what trick is this you played upon me? By heaven, I'll have your head for it.
But, sir, why blame me? Did you not send Hans Holbein, the great painter, to make a picture of her?
Aye, and a picture of her he made. With the same amount of exaggeration, he could have made a beauty of you. But enough! I'll not marry her! I'll not marry her, I say! I will not marry this over-heavy Flanders man.
But Henry was obliged to marry Anne of Cleves and remain her husband until he fell in love with the fascinating Catherine Howard. He divorced Anne of Cleves on the pretense that she had been previously betrothed to someone else. Cromwell, as a reward for the arrangement of the previous marriage, had his head struck off. The kingly butcher soon found excuses to make himself again a widower by beheading Catherine Howard. But he must have liked the name, and strange to say, found another woman in England who was prepared to become his wife. This was Catherine Parr, widow of Lord Latimer, who had the good luck to outlive her royal husband. But it was only luck. For had Henry lived but a little longer, Catherine Parr would have shared the fate of her predecessor. Let us meet Henry again and Queen Catherine as they are playing a game of chess. Her arch-enemy Gardiner has entered, just as Catherine has injudiciously won the game from Henry.
You are checkmated in four moves, my love.
Huh? What?
It is so, Henry. I have won.
It is true, Your Majesty. You will soon have to submit to defeat. See, look at the board. Danger threatens you from the Queen.
Ah, tis right, eh? You have won, Catherine. By heaven, you can boast of the rare good fortune of having vanquished Harry of England.
I will not boast of it, my noble husband. You have played with me, but as the lion plays with the puppy. But he does not crush because he has compassion on her. You have been magnanimous.
Magnanimity is an exalted but a very dangerous virtue. May I remind Your Majesty that magnanimity pardons crimes, and kings are not here to pardon but to punish.
But to be able to be magnanimous is the noblest privilege of kings, since they are God's representatives on earth and must exercise pity like God himself.
Sire, I hope Your Majesty does not share the Queen's views, else it would be bad for the peace and quiet of the country. Mankind cannot be governed by mercy, but only through fear. Here, sire, I have brought you indictments of several who have denied the King's supremacy and even dared to blaspheme and deny that Your Majesty is God's representative, the visible head of his holy church.
That is because for some weeks we have lighted no faggot piles and erected no scaffolds, eh? I imagine we're asleep. Well, we'll show them that we are a king, not only by the grace of God, but by the wrath of God, and that we still possess wood enough to build some piles of faggots for them. Give me my pen, and I must sign these warrants.
Oh, do not sign them, my husband. By all that is sacred to you, I conjure you not to let yourself be carried away by your momentary vexation. Consider, Henry, the weighty responsibility God has placed in your hands.
Oh, by heaven! I believe, forsooth, that you, Catherine, dare excuse traitors and blasphemers of the king. Whoever injures the king injures God. And if you're one of them, you too shall share the fate of these others. Have a care, Catherine, eh? Have a care, or I will sign your death warrant.
Henry!
The king is ill! Oh, attendants! The king is ill! Summon his physician and help him to his bedchamber.
Damned
dying, Cranmer. I am dying. Lord, what kind of world this is, where he who can condemn others to die is condemned to die himself. I have been a great sinner. I have been cruel, without mercy, without pity.
God has mercy, Your Majesty. God has compassion on every sinner.
Now, there can be no mercy for him who knew